Americans to wake up. The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Your host is humbled by the great support provided by subscribers like Mark Dennis, David Folsom, Created by Gale, and Robert Rutledge. And hold on to your mouse. We're going to be making some changes at the website. There could be some dislocation. So hang in there with me and send me an email if you have any problems logging in after Friday, March 16th. That's when the new regime will be in full effect. And my personal email is peter@peterbcollins.com. On the way toward the end of this podcast, Will Durst checks in and talks about the flap over the Goldman Sachs executive who resigned, saying that they call their investors, their clients, Muppets. But first, a conversation with Sue Wilson, the activist who produced the film called Broadcast Blues and who is at the center of coordinating boycotts of sponsors of the Rush Limbaugh program.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
Is it the end for Rush Limbaugh? Should he file for Social Security?
The world is collapsing around our ears. I turned up the radio. I can't hear it.
The U.S. Army is the latest advertiser to say, don't run my commercials on the misogynist Rush Limbaugh radio program. And there is a boycott organized by Sue Wilson that is underway. Sue is the activist who produced the great documentary called Broadcast Blues. She has recently founded the Media Action Center. And there is also a website particular to the Limbaugh protest called boycottsponsors.com. Sue, thanks for joining us today.
Peter.
And I really appreciate your activism. Tell me what your thoughts are about things catching up with Rush Limbaugh, because after all, his attack on Sandra, I don't know whether her name is Fluke or Fluck, I've heard it pronounced different ways, but the Georgetown University law student was not the first hateful or even anti-female tirade that Rush Limbaugh has broadcast in over 20 years on the air. But it certainly has gotten him in a whole lot of trouble.
You know, Peter B., I think that the Georgetown Law School student captures the imagination of the public because she's an individual. She's not a public figure. She's a law school student. And she's a woman who wasn't even talking about contraception to prevent birth, but rather contraception, the pill, to prevent other kinds of physical ailments. And so she's a tremendously sympathetic character, and to have Rush Limbaugh go off on her for days and days and days and denigrating her, and by fiat all women who use birth control, I think it finally just captured the public's imagination, and the public boiled over and said enough.
And, you know, he's used his twisted logic, he's demonized women in the past, he coined the term feminazi, and has been using that since the late 1980s. But he really did cross some lines here, and I agree that the student is not a public figure, and that there are many people, even those who buy into Rick Santorum's opposition to birth control, who say, don't talk about my daughter that way. The other thing is I think he crossed a line when he started to fantasize like an adolescent, saying that he wanted to see sex videotapes because, after all, he was entitled to because he had paid for her birth control. And I think that the idea, you know, where he creates this conflated sense that we're buying her birth control and therefore we have some right to demand something in exchange. But when he got into that voyeur mode of fantasizing about sex videos, I think that was one that really crossed the line from political speech or entertainer speech into the kind of sick and twisted commentary that you get from somebody who's not a real grown-up.
I think you're right. I think that Rush Limbaugh reached the factor, what I call, you know, when your stomach kind of turns when you hear something. And, you know, when you've reached that point, it's kind of hard to unturn the stomach again. And he's reached that with so many people. But I want to address something here, because Rush Limbaugh also used this whole issue to make it sound like this is a taxpayer issue. Has nothing to do with taxpayers. This has to do with what benefits a private employer or a private university offers in its health care package. It doesn't have to do with what taxpayers are paying. It has to do with what Sandra Fluke and other Georgetown law students would be paying Georgetown. They're paying for their health benefits now as it is. It's part of what their tuition pays for. Why can't they also get this one benefit in?
Well, because it's religious freedom, Sue. And, you know, the Catholics who run Georgetown have the right to deny birth control to their students.
Well, the religious freedom is really individual freedom, and we all need to go back to the Constitution and remember that one. Any religious institution or employer does not have the right by fiat to just say, this is how you will act because you are working for us. That is the misnomer. But bottom line, this isn't about taxpayers at all. It's another way that he will conflagrate different ideas into a misleading meme.
Well, and Sue, you raised an important point, because at the time that Rush made these comments, he was really supporting what was called the Blunt Rubio bill, which would allow any employer to deny contraceptive coverage in an employee health plan, basically for any kind of religious or moral reasons that are offered by the employer. And so this was really an effort to return us to the 1950s and to give employers, and in an extreme case, you can imagine that an employer who's a Christian Scientist would say, I'm not going to offer health insurance at all. I'm going to give you a Bible, and that is your health care plan.
That's right. And, you know, when he got into the issue, and this is the whole Republican Party, and let's face it, Rush Limbaugh is the head of the Republican Party. He happens to be the head that gets to be on 600 stations nationwide and gets into every nook and cranny of every community's public square of radio all across the nation. And, you know, what he says tends to be where the party goes. My gosh, when he stepped into this idea that we shouldn't be having any contraception, I think that's also where women stood up, and not just women, men stood up and went, wait a minute, we're really not talking about abortion here. We are talking about contraceptive services. Most people in this country, most Catholics in this country, agree that contraception is a good moral thing, not an immoral thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just amazing. It's just so darn wonderful. I'm jumping up and down for joy going, go, Rush, go. You just do it. This is great. And more, I'm jumping up and down for joy going, go, U.S. Go, U.S. Stand up for what's ours, our public airwaves. You stand up and tell those sponsors, we don't want to hear this crap, lies, this misinformation, this misogyny on what belongs to us, and that's our radio airwaves.
Now, Sue, you have a website up, boycottsponsors.com. You have a new a group that you started called Media Action Center, and you've been helping propel those who want to promote a boycott of advertisers who support the Limbaugh program either at the national level or by advertising on individual local radio stations. And this has had remarkable impact. We're up to about 150 sponsors now who have told Premier Networks, the company that syndicates the Limbaugh program, not to run their commercials on Limbaugh. And I once was responsible for leaking a memo that came from ABC Radio that it gave instructions to local stations not to run certain advertisers during Air America programming.
Because, you leaked that memo?
Yes, I did. And it's called a blackout memo. And there were a handful of advertisers at that time who said, don't put me on Limbaugh. There were about 95 that were saying, don't put me on Air America. And so we revealed that at the time, and it was my first big break. I got a story in the New York Times, and I love the second reference to Mr. Collins. But it has been a standard in the industry that advertisers can make a very wide media buy and then give instructions, you know, I don't want it here and I don't want it there. Well, this blackout list now of more than 150 major advertisers is the biggest I've ever seen. And as has been widely reported in the last couple of days, the syndicator, Premier Networks, which is wholly owned by Clear Channel Communications, they have told radio stations that they don't have any ads to run for the next 2 weeks. And so they are returning the network advertising time to the stations. But then the stations have local boycotts, and they can't make any money because their advertisers are telling them, well, you can run it on Sean Hannity, you can run it on some other show, but don't run it on Limbaugh right now. So it really has produced quite a backlash. It's costing Clear Channel and Premier and presumably Limbaugh himself quite a bit of money.
And isn't that just design? You know, Clear Channel has been saying for many, many years that they do not run the Rush Limbaugh show for political reasons. They only run it for monetary reasons. I guess we're going to find out if that's really true. I want to say this, though, Peter. In terms of the national boycott, I wish I could take as much credit as you're giving me. I've really been just a conduit for information. But I am trying to now promote the idea of the local boycott, because to me, all broadcasting is local. Every broadcaster is licensed to serve its local community. And gosh, you know, if we can start boycotting the local sponsors, and if you go to my website, you can see the Rush Limbaugh clock. You can learn when to listen into the Rush Limbaugh show and figure out which of those ads are local. Can I give my advice what to do next?
Oh, go right ahead. And just by the way, the clock that you list there is accurate. And to help people out, if you listen at the bottom of the hour, at 30 minutes past, there's a four-minute break there that is all local commercials. So that's the easiest place if you want to tune in just once an hour and find out who local advertisers are who are on the Limbaugh show. That's the easiest way to do it.
Absolutely. And you know, because we are talking local advertisers, this could be somebody that your kid goes to school with. So my suggestion is start by writing a letter to that advertiser and say, we understand you are still supporting the Rush Limbaugh show. We do not think that this is appropriate for our community. We do not want support your business if you are supporting this kind of a message. We want to give you 48 hours. If you do not stop within 48 hours, we will take further boycott action. I think it's important to give your local advertisers a heads up. But then, if after the 48 hours, they're looking at the public going, well, we don't really care what you think, then it might be time to organize an actual protest in front of that sponsor. A protest, send out a press release to your local newspapers and your local friendly radio stations, if there are any, and certainly your local television stations will cover this. Get a protest out there, and especially get some women out there and talk about why it is so important that we do not have this kind of viewpoint. Gosh, it isn't just this kind of viewpoint. You know, I'm kind of getting off on a different tangent here. It isn't just I will say that Rush Limbaugh does have a First Amendment right to say what he wants to say on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I and everybody across the country has a right to go and boycott those sponsors, and God bless us, we're doing it. It's great. But here's the rub. These big corporations are practicing what's called private censorship. Because in most of the communities across the country, you've got Rush and the right-wing wannabes who are following him, and that's all you can hear on the radio. That's it.
It's 90%. 90% of AM talk radio in this country is right-wing. And that's based on an actual study that was conducted 3 or 4 years ago. And since then, progressives and non-right-wingers have actually lost ground. But 90% is a very safe figure to use to describe the dominance of conservative voices on AM radio in this country.
Well, and this 90% represents, really, censorship of anybody else's views. Did you know, Peter, that the Supreme Court has ruled that these broadcasters cannot commit private censorship?
No. Tell me about that.
Isn't this great? 1969, Red Lion Broadcasting versus the FCC. The Supreme Court then said, you can't do that. Broadcasters have a special relationship with the public. It's kind of like it's a public-private partnership because we own the airways and they own the equipment. But just because they own the equipment, they do not have a constitutional right to privately censor what goes out over the air. That same case also said that there is a First Amendment aspect to broadcasting, but it's the right of the viewer and the listener, not the right of the broadcaster, which is paramount.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Red Lion case is really one of the only two that I'm aware of where the FCC has actually taken a license away from a broadcast operator. The other case was the RKO chain of stations. It was because the parent company got into trouble for paying bribes to sell tires overseas that the FCC ultimately ruled that RKO was unfit, and they didn't actually take the licenses away. They made them sell the stations to specified individuals trying to promote diversity. But beyond that, the FCC has been toothless. And Sue, I want to take people back a little ways here for a little story from my own youth. My mom forced me to take typing one summer, and once I learned to type, I started to write letters. And one of them I wrote was to the Federal Communications Commission, asking them to deny the license renewal of the Top 40 station that I listened to in my hometown of Cincinnati. And I had been, at the time there was no internet. We barely had incandescent light bulbs. But I had mailed away to the FCC and gotten a copy of the Communications Act of 1934 and gotten the information about license renewal. And I decided that my local station wasn't serving my needs. So I typed out a letter to the FCC, and I said, this is a petition to deny the renewal of WSAI Radio in Cincinnati. And I got a confirmation letter back from the FCC. And then one day I came home from school, and Mom said, Peter, what have you been up to? I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, Mr. Carnegie called, the general manager of the radio station, and he wants to meet with you. Well, I had my mom drive me to the radio station for this meeting. I believe I was 14 at the time. And I told him that I was unhappy because they were proposing to cut back their news coverage in the next license renewal period. And I told him I opposed that and I wouldn't withdraw my objection to their renewal until he did something about it. And in fact, they modified their application and they kind of split the amount of time they were going to cut back in half. And so I declared victory and removed that objection to their license renewal. But it was a real education for me that at that time, the process actually worked. And that in order to renew a license, the owner had to persuade the FCC that they had served, and this is the actual language, the public interest, convenience, and necessity. And it didn't have anything to do with how much money you make or what kind of ratings you have. It was aimed at the community of license. And later on, when I worked in Chicago for ABC in the 1970s, we still had a meaningful license renewal process. And I was given the job of the community affairs director. And my job was to go out and conduct 300 community interviews and talk to various leaders. And we had a whole diversity scheme we had to adhere to. And we had to ask them what the community issues were. And then we had to prove to the FCC that we had addressed those community issues in the preceding 3 years. So it was cumbersome. It was bureaucratic. Very few people ever got rejected by the FCC. But there was a process there that put the broadcaster in touch with his own community and that required him to satisfy local people in order to get the license renewed. And when Bill Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act of 1996, virtually all of that went away.
And just a quick question, Peter B. Did that station that you were working for, did that seem to make any profit?
The one in Chicago or the one in Cincinnati?
The one where that you were doing those ascertainments and finding out what the community needed and you served it. Did they go broke doing that?
No, they didn't. But in fact, the station didn't make money. It was an FM station before FM stations really started to become profitable. But ABC was a huge profitable company with the television network and the radio network. Paul Harvey's broadcast came out of our studios. And they owned a group of AM stations that were hugely profitable. But every one of their stations had to go through that process. And no, it didn't cost that much money, and it didn't make them go broke.
Absolutely. Well, let me tell you my story now. This is like fast forward to 2012, okay? A Media Action Center team leader, Milo Vannucci, out of West Palm Beach, Florida, filed a petition to deny the license of WJNO radio in West Palm Beach, Florida. For those who don't know, that's Rush Limbaugh's home station now. And I helped Milo with that, and we filed that license. For the audience, these licenses only come up for renewal once every 8 years. So if you missed your chance to complain, you don't get another chance for another 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the final filing date was January 1st of 2012. So guess how I spent my Christmas holiday? Anyway, we filed that license challenge based on two big factors. Number one, that Clear Channel, WJNO, as we've talked before in this interview, more than 90% of the programming is all right-wing, and they're not giving voice to the other side. We're saying that that is not serving the community, and especially when you're talking about single largest radio operator in the country. We also made another argument. You know, Rush Limbaugh tends to be on these stations that are called News Talk. Well, Rush Limbaugh is not news, even though the FCC even seems to give him exemptions saying that he's news.
Mm-hmm.
He really is not news. So we said that they are doing a disservice to the community by not telling their listeners which segments of their programming are news and which are talk. Now, that would be a very simple, very inexpensive thing to do. You know, you get into the news hour, and now here's our local news. And you get into the Rush Limbaugh show, and like, now here's the Rush Limbaugh show for your entertainment. It costs absolutely nothing, but it helps listener to start making some mental notes as to which is talk, which is entertainment, which
mm-hmm.
is opinion. Okay, mm-hmm. Long story short. Those were our arguments. We filed it January 1st. It's January 2nd. We had to go the day after the holiday. The license had to be decided. This had to be decided by February 1st. That was the last date that the FCC could make the decision. Milo has not received a postcard. He has not received a telephone call. He has not received any confirmation that they received this. Now, of course, it was all sent certified mail. We know that they got it. Okay? But the point being, the FCC is so non-responsive to the public at this point. They won't even tell you that they got it. And we still don't know if the petition was denied, other than WJNO is on the radio. So apparently, the petition to deny the license was denied. In other words, they mm-hmm. just automatically renewed the license. And again, it shows this fundamental breakdown at this federal agency that's in bed with these radio corporations. They seem to think that the radio corporations is who they're serving. It's time for us to start embarrassing the FCC and reminding them who they work for, and that's you and me, the people.
Sue Wilson, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I have the dubious distinction of having been the host who followed Rush Limbaugh for almost 3 years when they put him on KNBR here in San Francisco. And so I have a number of different angles of perspective on him, on his contribution to the radio industry, on the way he's viewed by management. And I have a couple of clips here from an interview I did with Rush in 1992, and he was still on the rise. And before you hear his on-air comments, I'll tell you that off the air, when we talked during the lengthy commercial breaks, he was a very different guy. And he explained to me how lucky he was, how he couldn't believe how successful he had become. And one of his comments was, "I'm going to ride this just as far as I can." So his sense of opportunism and the Jekyll and Hyde difference between who he is when the mic is on and who he is when it's off was very clear to me. But listen as he describes the way he conducts his program, and in the second clip, he rejects my notion that his sense of humor should be applied equally to politicians of the left and the right. So from the Peter B. Collins Tax Deductible Archives, here's a clip or two from Rush Limbaugh.
I look at my show as an entertainment forum for people, and I screen calls to find the best call. You know what in my philosophy, you know what the purpose of a good call is on my show? It's to make me look good. I will tell you flat out, this show is not about what anybody else but me thinks. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to discover what America thinks because it's impossible. There's no talk show host in the world who can tell you what his community or his neighborhood thinks based on what happens on his show. And so I'm not even laboring under that misconception. Calls are there to make me look good, to bring up interesting things. There's no public service aspect. There's no First Amendment aspect that I care about regarding it. And we're not looking for people who agree. In fact, we strive for people who disagree.
We'll talk more about that as we continue. Why don't you, a caller mentioned this to you one time, make fun of John Sununu, Dan Quayle, Ronald Reagan is a guy who, even if you love him, is a caricature who can be the source of humor. Why do you stay away from those people and simply drive piles into Ted Kennedy?
Well, please don't try to make a moral equivalence here between Kennedy and Reagan or Kennedy and Quayle.
They're public figures. They're public figures. You're a funny guy. Why do you only find humor in the icons of the left?
Well, in all honesty here, it's because I love Reagan, and I very much appreciate what he stood for, and I am sick and tired of the ceaseless ending character assassination and malignment that this man has received, and I don't need to add to it. I need to defend it. People say that what I do is attack my targets, and I don't do that, Peter. I get up and read the newspaper like everybody else, and I looked at who is attacking somebody. The militant environmentalists are trying to attack the timber industry. Militant vegetarians are attacking the beef industry. So I simply respond. I defend.
Mm-hmm. But often in responding to the militants, you write off an entire movement. Here's a letter from a guy in Stockton, and I won't go into all the details, but essentially he says, well, hey, you quit smoking. You recognize that you were hurting your own personal environment. But you write off even moderate people who want to save the planet, who want to conservation.
I've been very clear about this. The people with whom I have a disagreement are the extremists who wish to damage the capitalistic system of this country in order to see their remedies implemented. I am not at all for dirty water or dirty air. I'm not at all for not caring about it. But I do not think that you need to shut down the U.S. economy or start closing businesses or losing people, having people lose jobs in order to fix the environment. I don't think we're in doomsday. I don't think it's a crisis. I don't think it's fragilely balanced. And I think that capitalism and freedom and the American way of life are the solution to the messes that we humans make, not the solution being going back to the horse and buggy days and stop driving our automobiles and so forth.
Okay. Well, there you hear him again engage in a lot of false choices. But the central thing from that clip, Sue Wilson, is his fatuous remark that I don't attack people. And we see in very sharp relief that he did attack Sandra Fluke. I don't know how to say her name, but you know who I mean.
Yeah. Well, and in 1992, I'm sure he was attacking people also. He has also attacked me on his radio station. I mean, and you know, be lovely if he'd actually invite me on the show to have a debate. See, that's my real question. If he wants to attack me, or he wants to attack Sandra Fluke, why doesn't he man enough to actually go toe-to-toe with one of us?
Well, you know, he created, I do have to give him credit, because, first of all, it's important to note that Rush Limbaugh was recruited to play the part in a role that was determined through extensive market research. All right? So he had a show in Sacramento. Ed McLaughlin was the president of the ABC radio network. He used ABC's money to conduct a huge national survey. They launched a failed talk network in the mid-1980s, and the research discovered that there was an opening in the market for what was labeled non-guested confrontation talk radio. And Rush was recruited. They said, can you do this? And he said, sure. And one of the things in the non-guested form is that in order to attack your opponents, you would bring on their sound bites, but never, ever, for example, let Bill Clinton come on the program to defend himself or to have an honest exchange with Rush Limbaugh. And so throughout the 90s, he soundbited Clinton and talked back to him. But your point is correct, Sue. He has never been man enough to actually confront the people who he just, you know, drives piles into, to use my own phrase, daily on his radio show.
You know, and it's interesting, Peter B., when you talk about the 90s and you talk about Clinton, and, you know, I live in the Sacramento area. And so I had been listening to Rush Limbaugh off and on for a few years to see what the hubbub was about. One day when I clearly caught him lying to me, mischaracterizing a Time magazine article I had just read, I realized he was lying, and I quit listening at that point. But we were talking earlier about the 1996 Telecommunications Act. And here's what I saw that really happened as a result of that. Going back to 96, Clinton was president. Rush Limbaugh was on, I think, about 40 stations across the country. And so, yes, he was doing his anti-Clinton tirade on those 40 stations. And why 40? Because one company could only have 20 AM and 20 FM stations that they could own at that time. The 96 Telecommunications Act said one company could own as many as they could buy across the country. And mm-hmm. there were certain limits in terms of local markets.
Right.
Well, I'll never forget 1996, this new Telecommunications Act goes into effect. All of a sudden, Rush Limbaugh is flooding every nook and cranny on 600 stations all across the country with anti-Clinton tirades. And it was at that moment, this is where my activism goes back, it was at that moment, at that point it was 1998, that I said this Telecommunications Act is wrong, it's got to go. We started the Truth in America project to protest Kenstar and the corporate media for what they did to Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Clinton shot himself in the foot, so to speak, to put it mildly, in his own way.
Well, it definitely was below the belt.
And all the things that were, oh my gosh, there you go. But, you know, all the things that were said about him, and he was a murderer, and he was a drug dealer. I mean, these were put out all across the nation to all kinds of people who had never heard this before. And, you know, people think if they hear something on the radio, it's got to be true,
mm-hmm.
which is not the fact. But, by gosh, and you'll see this in Broadcast Blues, and, in fact, you can find it on my website at SueWilsonReports.com. I show a map of what happened in terms of, you know, the radio reach. And what happened in terms of the voting, when all of a sudden Rush Limbaugh was able to talk to 600 stations all across the country, basically to reach everybody, all of a sudden the country went red. The midsection of this country was checkerboard blue and red. All of a sudden the whole country just went sweeping to the right wing. Don't think for a moment that this doesn't influence this election, because it does.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sue, let's talk a little bit about the situation here that Limbaugh's gotten himself into, because with these sponsor boycotts, Premier, the company that syndicates his program, and I'll repeat that Premier is wholly owned by Clear Channel, Premier has told its affiliate stations that it will not be playing any national commercials for the next 2 weeks. Now, that's a huge loss of revenue to the networks in the tens of millions of dollars. Also, the local stations are boxed in because they can't take advantage of these extra commercial slots that the network has given back to them because they have boycotts of local advertisers who are saying, don't run my commercial during Limbaugh. So this puts a crunch on both the national syndicator, its parent company, Clear Channel, we'll come back to them in a second, and in particular on the fortunes of local radio stations. And Clear Channel is laboring under the huge debt load that was created when Bain Capital, Mitt Romney's company, took them private in 2008. And they barely made it to the close of that transaction because the banks revolted at one point and said, we're not going to fund this loan. There's too much debt and not enough income. And then, of course, the recession hit and radio had a very bad year in 2009. And Clear Channel barely survived that. But because some of their, you know, a huge amount of their free cash flow comes from the Limbaugh property through Premier to Clear Channel, this puts just another huge load on that company. And we saw last week the Daily Kos published an item about a shareholder lawsuit brought against Clear Channel because the parent company borrowed more than $600 million from its wholly owned subsidiary, Clear Channel Outdoor. They own the billboards that Clear Channel has. And so this shows that they are desperate for cash. They are robbing their own piggy banks inside the company to keep it afloat. And this hit on Limbaugh and the important cash flow that he brings to Clear Channel could be devastating. And there's one more factor here. And that is that the company called Cumulus, which took over the AM stations that once were owned by the ABC network, most of those stations carry the Rush Limbaugh program, including WABC in New York and WLS in Chicago. And on April 2nd, Cumulus has announced that it will be unplugging Rush Limbaugh from those stations in that time period and launching a new show starring Mike Huckabee, the failed presidential candidate and Fox News contributor. And so this puts a lot of competition that has never existed before, powerful competition in Rush Limbaugh's way at a time when he has weakened his own franchise to the point that it may not be viable long term.
Isn't this just sweet? I mean, to make it really, really, really simple, boycott those Rush Limbaugh sponsors and we may bankrupt the entire Clear Channel Corporation. Wouldn't that be lovely? Wouldn't it just be lovely if somehow they had to divest many of these stations, that they had to give opportunities to minorities and women to own some of these stations and program them according to their First Amendment values? Wouldn't that just ducky.
It would be damn ducky, ma'am. All right, Sue. So we want to direct people to Media Action Center, and that website, mediaactioncenter.org, is that right?
.net.
Okay. And sponsor, boycottsponsors.com.
Yes.
And should we confuse them with any other websites? You have quite a few.
No, I think if you put those two, you can follow the links and find everything else.
All right. Well, Sue, thanks for all the work you're doing to recapture our media for actual, you know, real Americans and try to wrest it away from the greedsters and those who derive those profits from exploitation of this right-wing claptrap that is called entertainment, but is embraced by many people as news and commentary.
Well, and thank you, Peter B. Collins, for all that you do. You are a national hero.
Oh, well, okay. We interrupt the theme music and the end of this program to bring you the late-breaking commentary from San Francisco stand-up comic and sit-down satirist Will Durst.
Hey, guys. Will Durst here with a few words for all my fellow Muppets. Referring specifically to Greg Smith, formerly of Goldman Sachs, who wrote an op-ed in the New York Times announcing he's out of there due to his company's extreme moral bankruptcy. According to Smith, associates are encouraged to rip off their own billion-dollar clients and regularly disparage them as Muppets. I know, what a shocker. Brokerage firms without a conscience. My God, what's next? High school parties where beer is served? Airline food that tastes like damp glued-together bar coasters? Mitt Romney failing to speak like a real human? Romney's the guy who keeps hyping his history as a private equity investment banker, so it's easy to imagine him as just another tentacle of the vampire squid. Wrapped so tightly in the me-first and success-at-any-cost culture that he squeaks money when he moves. On a daily basis, we see evidence on the campaign trail, as he does or says whatever he thinks it's going to take to win. Pro-choice? I got your pro-choice. Wait, oh, not pro-choice. Well, then neither am I. Everything from talking about NFL owner buddies to pretending he likes cheesy grits. Mitt, this isn't personal, but if ever there were a non-cheesy grits-eating kind of a dude, it's you. Politicians even have a name for we Muppets. They call us low-information voters. People not paying too close attention. Who will believe anything? Such as the 50% of Republicans in Mississippi and 45% in Alabama still calling President Obama a Muslim. And it wouldn't be surprising to hear a good percentage of them actually think he's made out of muslin, a loosely woven cotton fabric. Only a matter of time before Karl Rove folds a spool of muslin into a ball, sticks his hand up it, and makes it say exactly what he thinks we low-information voters want to hear. Or did he already do that and call it Rush Limbaugh? For the Peter B. Collins Show, I'm Will Durst. Muppet.
I better get on this horse and ride off before I get further embarrassed. Thank you, Sue Wilson. And send me an email with your comments, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until